Off the Ball. GAA.
But I remember it came to a question and they asked about how Limerick would win. And I was like, Limerick will work 110% and we'll outwork any team. And if you are working at 100%, we're working at 110, 120. We won't be outworked.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Yeah, I think it's a big moment.
The League of Ireland is live and exclusive again this Friday on Off the Ball.
There's still time here.
Last Friday night, the champions were battered by arch-rivals Bohemians.
Rovers haven't been good enough.
It was a late show, and to whom it may concern, Bradley's boys made sure this week's opponents were duly warned.
Aaron Green has made it 3-2, a game that was over.
Pretenders to the throne, Derry City came from behind to beat Waterford's with a couple of late ones themselves, and talisman Mikey Duffy struck again.
It's picked up by Mikey Duffy. Oh, he does really well.
On Friday, the Candy Stripes come to Dublin, looking to throw the gauntlet down to Rovers. Shamrock Rovers versus Derry City at Tallaght Stadium is live and exclusive on Off the Ball from 7 this Friday on News Talk and the Go Loud app.
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
Now Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves. And it's 7-2. Oh, my goodness.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? Find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
Off the Ball Daily.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, John Myler will be with us from 7:30 to look ahead to the weekend's hurling. We'll be talking about hurling on television, future GAA rights, and also about the new rules that are potentially going to be implemented in his sport as well. So that's your 7:30 tonight. Between 8 and 9, Brian O'Driscoll is going to be with us in studio looking ahead to Wales tomorrow evening. It's a 8:10 kickoff tomorrow night in Dublin against the Welsh. And then between 9 and 10, the football show as ever is coming your way. And as always on a Thursday, Dion Fanning will be with us in studio for that one. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp number. Stephen Doyle is on Newsround duty.
Hello. Evening, gents. Hello.
And Dion Fanning is coming early for the Newsround as well. Dion, how are you?
I'm good, Owen. How are you?
Good. Is tonight at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium the most nerve-wracking experience possible for any footballer in the modern world? Like, I just cannot think of a way in which this is not terrifying for them, because this has all happened so quickly, this idea of them being too big to go down, to arrive at a point where it's now like, oh God, they will be in massive hot water if they don't get a win tonight, especially if they get beaten at home by Crystal Palace tonight. The whole thing has gone from admittedly being very, very grim to extraordinarily grim in quite a quick space of time.
And with the prospect that the manager, who, you know, is a short-term manager, but they didn't mean this short-term, could be sacked at the end if they lose. And, you know, it's back to square one. You know, the Tudor era is at an end.
As the Tudor falls down.
Yep.
I was actually just talking to Dion outside, and we were talking about, myself and Brian were over doing the North London Derby a couple of weeks ago, and the previous game we'd done there was against Chelsea, I think it was, and there was real venom and anger rolling down from the stands during the Chelsea game, whereas the game against Arsenal, it was just, and that was Tudor's first game in charge, it was just pure apathy. There was no passion in the crowd whatsoever. I think that was the worrying thing for Spurs fans.
I was contemplating last night who would actually be a good candidate for this. Not even in terms of specific names, but in terms of the type of character you have to be. Because Tudor seemed like a bit of a strong man. Like, he seemed that he hasn't, you know, been emotionally perturbed too much in his entire life. He seems like a tough guy. And this just seems like the most emotionally destabilizing 2 weeks of his entire life. He just seems shocked and baffled by what he's like. How bad is it behind closed doors when you've got a manager coming out immediately after his first game saying that this is a bad situation? Like, as I've said before, the Rangnick comparisons seem pretty obvious to make, that this guy's just going to sit there for as long as he is the Tottenham interim boss or caretaker boss. Well, sorry, he's their permanent boss until the end of the season. How long is he going to be that guy where he can keep saying this is awful without actually providing any noticeable solutions in terms of their results?
Well, again, yeah, it's a sort of a trait in modern management where you actually do have, Amorim kind of was very good at that as well. It's sort of like, I'm commentating on this situation, which you may have formed the view that I actually have some control over, but no, I'm actually just going to deliver some hard hitting home truths, and then, you know, nothing's going to change. Now, the other thing that's kind of incredible about Tudor is that, like, this, it's almost becoming kind of, you know, you've got three games. Like, you know, this is like, management is getting so just extreme in terms of how quickly, if there is nothing tangible very quickly, I know you're short term anyway, but if there's nothing tangible very quickly, we're going to move on, you know? And, you know, Nottingham Forest obviously have perfected this season, but like, it's kind of, you know, he's now like, it's, well, you had your chance, mate. You know, it's not working out. You know, you had a good run at it, but it's time for us to look somewhere else.
Tim Sherwood has gone up the pecking order, I presume, as a result of this.
Well, I actually met him at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Funny enough, he was in the bathroom he seemed in great form, actually.
Did he say hello to him?
I did, yeah. He said hello back. It was him who said hello to me.
Oh, okay,
it was kind of smiling. He was, oh, yeah, hello, how's it going? Kind of taken aback a bit, but... The only thing I was interested in asking Dion was, because you were on the Premier League beat around the time Leeds went down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, there does seem to be kind of similarity between the two squads, and the whole narrative around that Leeds team was too big to go down. They're not going down.
Yeah. Like, from memory of like Leeds, because there were so many things, the Owen's point about how quickly this has happened. I don't think that was there with Leeds, because, you know, the thing was falling apart financially for so long. And then, you know, then prior to that, there was like the Bowyer and Woodgate trial and all these kind of things. Mm. So there was an unraveling over a period of time, but also, I suppose, from a greater height, because, you know, they got semi-finals of the Champions League. They'd had all, you know, those elements where they had been a team that people loved, and then very quickly, within a few years, they were like facing relegation. But this Tottenham team, if that Leeds team had players, you kind of think, you know, where are these players going to go if they are relegated? There's nothing about this Tottenham team, like the team, and this is, I think, what Tudor's frustration is. There's nothing about that team that you look at it and go, these guys are too good to go down. Look at these players. Like, there's nobody there. You're kind of thinking, oh, where will they end up? Like, he'll be a bargain for somebody. You'll just have to, you know, take your wage cut and play in the Championship.
Would this be the most astonishing, biggest club to go down in the Premier League era?
It would be close to it, but then again, well, so Newcastle went down, Leeds, like they are Tottenham are a bigger club than that, and I suppose they've been in the Premier League a longer period than like those clubs have had experiences.
And you said Champions League semi-finalists about Leeds. I know it's a longer period of time, but Tottenham are Champions League finalists 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Which they could be as well this season. Let us not forget.
Yeah.
Like, it's not unthinkable.
Yeah. And champions of Europe in the Europa League last season.
Yeah, well, exactly. So that's the thing.
Well, a friend of mine is a Spurs fan. He wants Ange back. So Ange back to the end of the season. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, after the things he said on that podcast, I doubt they'd welcome him back with warm arms.
Yeah,
a warm hug.
I mean, it would be amazing. It would be a great storyline if that was the case. I think it's going to be a phone call to Maurizio Pochettino to suss him out.
Alan, what about Alex Ferguson?
Harry Redknapp.
Seriously, get Alex on the... Get Alex
why,
on
why
there.
Not?
He's
why?
Going to matches anyway.
Yeah.
It's nine
He's
games.
He's not going to Spurs matches, though.
Yeah. Harry Redknapp, Tim Sherwood, or Ange Postecoglou, that's your three-man shortlist, and that'll be good crack for the rest of us until the end of the season, no matter who they pick from that list. 087 is our number. 087-918-180, rather, is our number. You can get us on WhatsApp. Stephen Doyle, where are you starting this evening?
Yeah, well, just on international affairs, own Patrick Schick has emerged as an injury doubt for Czechia ahead of their World Cup playoff semi-final against the boys in and green. The striker was ruled out of Bayer Leverkusen's game with Hamburg on Wednesday, with the club citing a muscle injury as the reason for his absence. That playoff tie takes place on March 26th, with the winner set to face one of North Macedonia or Denmark. Schick in good form this season, scoring 13 goals in 31 club games, while he scored 24 goals in 50 internationals. Good enough for ninth place on their all-time list.
That would be a huge blow. Reading the comments of his club manager, it does seem that he could be back as soon as this weekend. And he's touch and go for this weekend, obviously, as he said, but maybe next week he's back. I'm not sure I'm pinning my hopes on this guy missing the Ireland game.
No, I wouldn't. And listen, I wouldn't be taking any... I don't want to sound like you're happy about something like this, you know, like you want their players to be fit and ready, and also
no chance.
If you start taking any pleasure in these things, no, you don't. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not mentioning any Irish players, okay? I'm not mentioning any.
Steve-O, your top story has been the best thing that's happened to me today. This is the only thing giving me joy right now, is the hope that Patrick Schick might be injured, and I hope his injury is 3 weeks longer than first feared, and I hope he's okay after that.
Owen's mood is very weather driven, we've noticed over the last a couple of weeks. We had that sunny spell there a couple of weeks ago, and you were
Tuesday, lads. Tomorrow on Saturday, it's 9 degrees and sunny.
So, yeah.
Of course, we don't want to be celebrating his fortune. So,
Troy Parrott doing well last night, apropos of nothing. In the cup. That's it.
We just want to send our best to Patrick Schick, and hopefully a speedy recovery.
Tempting fate, and like it is. But at the same time, you do have to take advantages or perceived advantages where they come along.
Correct. Evan Ferguson's gone back to his club. He's gone back to Brighton.
So
at this stage would be hugely surprising if he were to be involved in the squad.
He's all but out, I think, at this stage. Adam Eade, of course, has a groin issue. He's out. Mikey Johnston was the latest added to that list after a stress fracture suffered in action with West Brom.
So, Tottenham tonight. Yeah. What can you tell us?
Well, let's give you the two teams, actually, because Tottenham have Vicario on goal. Back three of Polina, Danso and Van de Ven. Porro and Souza are the wing-backs, with Gray and Sarr in midfield. Colum Moani and Tell will play off Solanke. The Crystal Palace team, it's Henderson in goal. Richards, Riyad and Canvo are their back three. Munoz and Mitchell, the wing-backs, with Wharton and Kamada in central midfield. Sarr and Gesson will play just behind Larsson up front. But the interesting team news on Crystal Palace's side is Brendan Johnson, of course, the former Spurs man, scored the winner in the Europa League final. He's on the bench for Palace. It's just set up for him, isn't it?
It really is. This is usually the part in the conversation where you're like, it doesn't matter, it's not going to happen, they're not going to get relegated. But a lot has changed under Tudor, it seems, in the last 2 weeks. You start to think that it could be a bad night for them. Emma making the point behind the glass as well, that the check off the ball, laughing at us tonight with Evan Ferguson's misfortune. But they have, however, sent out their best, and they hope for a speedy recovery for Evan Ferguson. So thank you very much to check off the ball for that. James in Longford says, Tottenham beat Bodo Glimt last year. The vibe in both of those clubs is very different now. And then Dermot Keenan is referring to Arsenal fans, and a huge dilemma for Spurs to get relegated, as it would be funny. However, Arsenal would miss out on the regular 6 points a season. It was a phenomenal night for Arsenal last night, given the win for West Ham, the draw for Nottingham Forest, and of course, Manchester City dropping points and Arsenal getting their 3 points to boot. We'll have more on this in the football show, but you're not feeling the joy for Arsenal right now, Dion, I understand?
Yeah, well, I'm not feeling any joy. Well, I have said that I think they were going to win the league. I haven't wavered on that over the last few weeks.
You're not going to battle the court of public opinion, which dictates that Arsenal are bad for football.
They are, but lots of things are bad for football, and Arsenal is just one of them.
They're in a long line of bad things. Plenty of which is coming up later. We're going to discuss Fabrizio Romano after 9 o'clock as well, and that situation where the Saudi government paid him to do an ad for their humanitarian efforts across the globe. We'll be talking about Liverpool as well there. Next, though, you're talking about a major announcement regarding a change to the second tier of English football.
Yeah, just say that game kicks off at 8 o'clock in North London. And look, it's not all bad news for Tottenham fans, because from next season, the Championship playoffs will be expanding from 4 teams to 6. EFL clubs have approved the decision and want to increase the number of competitive fixtures during the closing stages of the campaign. The exact format isn't agreed yet, but will likely consist of 7 games. The two winners of eliminator ties will progress to the semi-finals against teams who finished 3rd and 4th in the table.
What do we think of this? Like, is there not a case here where finishing third in the championship is already a little bit devalued? Like, quite often that it doesn't transpire that that team ends up getting promoted because there's a sense of pressure on them. Maybe they've had a much better season. Maybe they've gone harder at certain points of the season to kind of further compound that, bring two more teams into it. I'm not sure, is it doing much for the meritocracy of the league?
Well, the thing is, this is one of the major issues, not just with football, but with all sports, is that there's this desire of administrators to tinker with things that are already okay. Like the playoffs, the championship playoffs are some of the most exciting games at the end of every single season. Like, there's, you never get a season where there's no drama in the playoffs, whether it be in both ties or just one or whatever the case may be, or in the final. So why mess with it? Just leave it as it is. And this is, it all comes down to money. That's what it is. It's all about TV money, money for the clubs involved. And yeah, I don't see why you have to do this, why you have to mess with something that's already successful.
Yeah, I think it's like one of the things about the championship, the beauty of the championship is that, like, you look at it and you see like so many teams are in contention for a playoff. Or if you're a team like I follow QPR, and like, you know, you look at them and you think they can still do it. Like, there's only, I think, 10 points. They're only 10 points off the playoffs, which they always tend to be around this time of the year. You know, it's if you spread it out, again, it just gets, it becomes, everything can't be, you can't have everything as a competition, because then nothing becomes a competition. And if you spread it out to such a degree that, like, you know, QPR are genuinely in a chance of reaching the playoffs, then the whole thing becomes meaningless. Mm.
Sean and Tal has been in touch to say, evening lads, the only consolation for Tottenham fans is if they're relegated and Arsenal in the league, then Tottenham would be the bigger story. Kieran, meanwhile, says, play Nathan Collins in midfield versus the Czechs later this month. Big physical presence, and we all remember his goal versus Ukraine in 2022. Also, Ireland has enough good defenders in O'Brien, O'Shea, Egan, Omabamadeli, etc. It feels like we've had this conversation quite a bit over the last few months, but increasingly so since Josh Cullen has got injured. And I think we're also a little bit haunted by the ghosts of Wembley, which wasn't Nathan Collins in midfield's fault. It was Ireland getting reduced to 10 men in that game.
Yeah, we did talk about it, and I remember thinking, keep him where he is. But then as you get closer and you start looking at Ireland's midfield options, there's, you know, there's part of you that thinks, well, maybe that would be the way to go about it. And, you know, he hasn't had a great time with his club recently. Mm. And, you know, those defensive mistakes may be less likely if he's in midfield. I wouldn't do it on balance, but like, there aren't the options in midfield. You know, Cullen was really good in those matches. Like, that's the thing as well. Like, he really was. I know people would say how important he was for a long time, but I guess when the results weren't that good, it didn't have as big a significance. But he was so important in those games, and it does look like without him, you're kind of going, what is the solution?
Yeah, he's really good for Burnley as well this season, and they've certainly missed him. I see Joe Hodge is doing okay for Tondela in the Portuguese top flight. They are 19th, which isn't great, but he's doing all right. You know, wouldn't be a bad option maybe to call in to have him in reserve.
Okay, one to keep an eye on. Let's talk about the League of Ireland here, because tomorrow night we've got live commentary of Shamrock Rovers versus Derry City. Stephen Bradley has been out doing media ahead of this, Steve-o.
Yeah, a couple of interesting things from his engagements today. He spoke about his squad only having 2.5 weeks of pre-season, having to rotate with so many games at short notice. So the other sides in the division are ahead of them in that regard. The boss of the champions also said, we won't see the best of their new signings until the summer. Now, our reporter Ben Symes was speaking to Bradley today, and they had a chat about the Dublin Derby defeat against Bohemians last Friday night.
Probably something happened that we haven't seen from your team a lot over the last couple of years, which was in the midfield. Bo's really, I suppose, outworked, outran, or outperformed your midfield, which we haven't really become used to seeing that over the last couple of years. Have you had a chance to look back and analyse what happened there?
Yeah, no, I disagree with you. I think when you look at all the stats, that's completely false, and people can get dragged into that narrative. But I think the stats will tell you it's completely different. So it's not our job to get caught up in narratives like that and be emotional. It's our job to understand what happened within the game. And what I said after the game, I stand by.
Not having that, Steve-o, what's the truth of what happened last Friday?
Well, and look, I was in the stands watching the game, but speaking, we did the LOI pod on Wednesday. Vinnie Perth and Johnny Dunleavy were with us, and I think they both felt that the Bohemians midfield were better on the night, and that the Shamrock Rovers midfield were maybe just caught a little bit off guard, shall we say. Like Bradley himself has even said that they're behind the rest of the teams with regard to match fitness, match sharpness, because of their delayed pre-season due to their extended European sojourn, shall we say, last year. But I do think Bo's got the better of them in midfield. And listen, I've been interviewing Stephen Bradley. I have a good relationship with him, I think. But you do know sometimes when you kind of, you hit on something with him, he gets a little bit spiky, which maybe he was there. But and look, I totally understand that. He's defending his team. Why wouldn't he? And I think he'll be hoping that they can get out there against Derry City tomorrow. It's going to be interesting because James McLean, as we know, is playing as a central midfielder with the candy stripes. So they might feel that they can try and get the better of a player who wouldn't be accustomed to playing in central midfield.
You have some League of Ireland transfer news for us as well.
Yeah, Cork City have confirmed Cathal O'Sullivan will join Preston North End once his contract expires with the League of Ireland First Division side. The 19-year-old winger was linked with the move abroad prior to a second cruciate ligament injury last season. He's made 50 appearances for the Lee Siders, also scoring 7 goals for the clubs.
We'll be talking about Fabrizio Romano later. Who is the League of Ireland's Fabrizio Romano? I mean, it's clearly a very lucrative position. I mean, you could be sent out there to do ads on behalf of any regime. Is it you, Steve-O? Like, are you that guy?
No chance. No, no, God. I don't have my finger on the pulse of transfers, but there's all a good... They're all lovely journalists, shall we say, on the League of Ireland beat.
It's amazing with the sort of weirdness of the very online transfer-interested people. Like, I've just got it back up here because it kind of reminds me of when the Victor Ojeduna to Arsenal news was confirmed. Dan McDonnell, I'm sure his mentions would have been interesting after that, because this wave of Arsenal fans would have come flooding into his mentions to talk about this guy that the vast majority of them have never seen play, but they'll give their opinion on him anyway. Just remember screenshotting this and posting it a few months ago, back in August it was, when this was confirmed. And it was David Ornstein of The Athletic who had put out, you know, Arsenal reaching an agreement for Shamrock Rovers 16-year-old Victor Ojeduna. And there was a quote tweet from some guy who had, like, Eze as his profile picture. And he said, first discovered him in 2020. Been watching him closely ever since. He is a facilitator, level raiser. Despite having thuggish aspects, he's suppressed them and come out of it with low narcissistic levels. Slinks around like a servant, ready to help his teammates. Good signing. About absolute nonsense gets spouted in the world of transfers. Like, oh, that could be you. That thuggish. Could be you if you just became the League of Ireland Fabrizio. So that is kind of what comes to mind. Again, more on that after 9 o'clock. We have one other League of Ireland story. We've got an update on Oriel Park.
Yeah, that pitch repair work that was going on this week is completed. The new artificial surface was damaged by flares thrown on by Drogheda United supporters before the Louth derby. The company PST Sport, which laid the pitch, confirmed today that the surface has been restored to world-class standards. Dundalk's next fixture at Oriel is on the Friday, the 13th of March, when they entertain Waterford.
Right, let's move on to the golf. Shane Lowry back in action today after last week's disappointment in Florida.
Yes, indeed, Owen, and it was all going so well at the start. Just trying to get his latest score here, because he started off well. He got a birdie on the opening 8 holes. He was 1 under par just coming up to the turn, and then he got bogeys on 9 and 10 before getting a birdie on the 11th hole. But sadly then he got another pair of bogeys before he finished his round, which he has signed off for 74, which leaves him on 2 over par. That's Shane Lowry, his first round of golf since that collapse at the Cognizant. Now Rory McIlroy, he went out a bit later. He's on his 5th hole. He's currently 1 under par, and that leaves him 8 shots off the lead, which is being held by Daniel Berger. Berger had a sensational round today. He's 9 under par. He's got a 1-stroke lead now. 3-stroke lead over Colin Morikawa. Berger got 6 birdies on the back 9 on his way back home. Meanwhile, Leona Maguire is 3 shots off the lead after day 1 at the Blue Bay LPGA in China. The Cavan golfer signed for 69 today, while Lauren Walsh is 1 under after carding an opening round 71.
Right, let's finish up on the rugby then. How did Ireland's captain's run go today?
Yep, all is well in the camp, Bone, and no late injury issues to report ahead of the must-win match against the Welsh. The home team will be looking to keep their Triple Crown quest on track, as well as keeping alive their slim championship-winning chances. The starting 15 is quite different to the one that took to the field at Twickenham, where Ireland enjoyed that record win over England. Five changes in all, but one of those is a very familiar face to Caelan Dorris. The Ireland captain spoke today about playing alongside Nick Timoney in the back row against the Welsh.
Yeah, it's class been playing against him over the last couple of weeks again. So we played together. I was in fourth year, he was in sixth year in school. Won a school's cup together for Blackrock. Yeah, his evolution has been unbelievable. Obviously, he's in Ulster over 10 years now, been playing some very good stuff up there, but I think he's taken it to another level over the last season or so. He's always been rugby obsessed and puts a ton of hard work in. And yeah, it's class to see it come to fruition with some of the performances he's put in.
Yeah, don't knock the rock, boys, there in the back row. Head coach Andrew Brown's made two changes to his Ireland under 20 side for the Six Nations meeting with Wales at Virgin Media Park on Saturday. Dylan McNeice comes into the second row after recovering from a knee problem, while Ben Blaney starts in the back row. Ireland currently second in that table.
Yeah, what's the temperature check in Ireland at the moment, Dion?
Well, I was just thinking, you haven't asked me for a prediction since the France game.
Yes.
And if you had asked me for a prediction for the England game, I would have said Ireland were going to win.
Okay. Why didn't I do that?
So I was telling people Ireland are going to win this, and they just didn't ask me. But my one platform.
I know that's that was staring me right in the face. So apologies.
Essentially I was right. I think the France prediction was correct. It was just too premature.
Yeah. You didn't ask me which French game.
Yeah, which
could be in any Six Nations.
Or which Ireland game.
Or which Ireland game. Yeah, will they win at a weekend?
Yeah, no, I think things are looking good. I think the England game was one of those great occasions. Maybe perhaps because expectations were low.
Yeah,
but it was a fantastic game to watch.
Will you have the big screen down in the clubhouse on Friday night? The doggy football.
Don't have a big screen, Steve. So it's very cold in there as well. So it wouldn't draw a crowd.
Well, you want to bring the old TV down?
Yeah, we could do that. But no, I think people will be watching at home.
Give us the prediction then. The rugby article, Dion Fanning, Ireland versus Wales. What's going to be the full time score?
Oh, I think the score.
Well, you're going to predict Ireland will win, so we need to mix this up a little
bit. Well, I don't want to be, you know, at the same time, you've got to be very conscious. Again, like the Czech commentary, you want to just be respectful of the opposition.
Correct.
So I think Ireland will win by 10 points.
Oh, conservative.
Yeah, well, that's me.
There's your quote, Wales Online.
There you go.
Is that why can they pin that up on the dressing room walls? We're not going to do too badly.
Do it for Dion. Yeah. He's your biggest supporter.
Yeah, exactly.
Dion Fanning, we'll chat to you after 9 o'clock on the football show. Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Still to come over the next 90 minutes before we get to the football show, we'll have Brian O'Driscoll after 8 o'clock. John Myler up next, talking hurling.
Off the Ball Daily.